The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling, addicts, and addiction. Joining me as always is Dan Trelauer. Good morning, Danny. How are you?
I'm great, Craig. Good morning.
And happy to have a gambler in recovery as well. Megan joins us this morning. Megan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to share your story. And so when was the last time you wagered?
So my last bet was August 9th, 2024.
Well, all right, congratulations. That's awesome. Very proud of you for getting that far.
Yeah, thank you. It's taken a lot, but it feels wonderful.
What was your game of choice, if there's one specific game?
I didn't have a specific game, but online gambling was what took the grips into me. Definitely focused on the slots, but online gambling just put me in a self-destructive path for sure.
All right, let's hear some of your story. How old were you when you were first exposed to gambling? Even well before it became a problem, what was your introduction to it?
So at a very young age, even from, I would say, 4 years old, gambling was something celebratory in my family, something that they utilized, you know, whether it be the horse tracks, the dog tracks, even Hialeah in Florida when we were visiting my grandparents at their condo. The normalcy of it was embedded into the children in our family, especially myself. And, you know, it just was something that was accepted. It was something not day to day, but definitely annually, we'd find ourselves in situations that that were just always there. It was always okay. It was something of an entertainment value and something that brought us together.
And Danny, that's something we talk about a lot. It's a very normal, natural, nothing wrong with it, kind of initial exposure into this world.
Yeah, that's right. When we see it normalized at an early age, brings family together. It's a fun form of entertainment, and you don't see that negative, so you don't think there's any harm. It's not like alcohol. It's not like drug use. You know, you're not seeing the side effects, so what's the harm? Everyone's having fun.
So as it turns out, now that, you know, everyone's aware that you have a problem, did you find out that other relatives did and you just didn't know about it? Or are you kind of the first in your family to have some type of issue?
Oh, no, definitely. You know, my family grew up in kind of a state of mind that I think a lot of us did back in the 80s and 90s where, you know, things such as addiction, regardless if it was substance abuse, gambling, or something on the emotional side, was always kind of suppressed. So my mother actually used it as a form as her numbness, as her suppression. She battled cancer for over 8 years in three types, and her outlet was gambling. And we were all aware of it. We were all kind of present in the moment and knew that this was going on. But we felt the need not to say anything because it was hard. It was something until you get into recovery and have a great knowledge base about how harmful this is. You know, someone who's struggling that much with a disease that ultimately took her life, we didn't say anything. We just let it be. So in retrospect, would I have chosen the same path moving forward? Absolutely not. But unfortunately, that's just something that happened.
Gambling took her life or cancer did?
Cancer dead. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure that we differentiated between the two. So walk me through how old you were when you started making gambling a more important part of your life.
So at a very early age, I was battling lots of things emotionally, had some very deep, dark thoughts. Even at the age of 16 and onwards and throughout my adult life, I was able to suppress it. I was able to hide it. And gambling started really not being something problematic in a sense. I mean, now that I look at it, definitely some red flags should have been raised. Mm-hmm. But more so on the more entertainment value and when I was present in these casinos, before online gambling, you know, I would walk away hide myself going to the ATM, couldn't do anything other than feed that machine, because that sense of numbness kind of calmed everything going on in my head. I really turned to gambling actually after my mom passed away.
So you used gambling really to medicate yourself, yeah?
100%. 100%. And my mom and I always had a little bit of a tumultuous relationship, mm-hmm. and always tried to kind of struggle to capture her love. Not that she didn't love me, it's just that's how I felt.
Sure.
Always wanted to be independent, always wanted to prove to other people that I could be successful. But by doing that, I was keeping everyone at an arm's length. And when she passed away in COVID, and we weren't able to kind of have that grieving process. Mm. And to this day, I remember her last words to me. It wasn't, I love you. It wasn't, you mean the world to me. It was good luck. And I used those words and they just shattered me. I almost sometimes think I turned to gambling because it was something that she revered and loved so much that maybe I could build a connection after she passed away. If I did something that she loved so much, maybe I would keep a piece of her with me. And the day she passed away, I can remember opening up her computer and probably dropping $500 in 2 minutes. Just erratic behavior and things I was doing just to numb the grief and the pain and so many things that I should have looked inwardly and reflected about myself that I didn't.
So it's interesting you use the term erratic. I'll bring Dan in here again. To an outsider, someone that doesn't get it, yeah, it seems completely erratic, even irrational, if I may use that word. But it actually makes complete sense that you had this kind of fractured relationship emotionally with your mom. She liked to gamble, so you went to a place that made her happy in an effort to make yourself happy, right, Dan?
Yeah, it's a way of bonding, both, you know, when people are alive and then in their passing. And I'm so sorry for your loss, Megan. I mean, that's really hard, especially during the pandemic, to have to deal with all that. So not only are you dealing with social isolation, now you have personal isolation. There's all kinds of isolation. And it's almost a form of grief bonding, trauma bonding. And you know what's interesting is that there's a lot of escape gambling going on. You know, you're escaping, you're avoiding pains, you're trying to numb out those negative elements. The problem is what we do in life is when we numb the negative stuff, we also numb the positive stuff.
Sure.
So we numb grief, we numb sadness, depression, guilt, but we also numb joy, gratitude, and we get into that endless vicious cycle.
Obviously, Megan, we could talk to you forever, and I appreciate that you're sharing some time with us. So let me kind of fast forward, if we can. Walk me through, before we get to the bottom of the barrel moment for you, walk me through at the height of your addiction. What was the day like for you in regards to your gambling?
Oh, at the height of my addiction, I was giving everything. I was giving my life to this thing, this addiction, this disease. I would gamble in the morning in the bathroom. I would gamble on my way to work. I would gamble at work. I would gamble at any given moment because the accessibility was there, right? I didn't have to walk into an establishment to do this. I could feel as though I was getting my medicine. Is really what I thought I was doing. I was divulging so much to this thing that made me feel not good, not wonderful, but just numb, just allowing to calm the voices in my head and sit in that silence. And whether it be sitting on the couch while my family was present, it was a day-to-day thing that really encompassed every
sure.
single part of my life.
What was, if you don't mind me asking, the come-to-Jesus moment for you that made you decide to, you know, to try to live your life without gambling? What was that moment for you?
Yeah, so I did everything. I did the lying. I did the cheating. I did the stealing. I did the betrayal. I got so deep in that past that I could convince myself that, you know, the next big win was going to be it. I was never chasing money. I was chasing a version of my life in that dream world that we talk about, right? And I did horrible things. I took things from people who put me in a place that they revered me, that they felt as though I had that integrity and that trust. And now that I look back on it, I know now that there was no way out of it. My suicidal thoughts were on a daily basis. If I wasn't gambling in the bathroom, in my bed, wherever, I was a mess. I was crying. I was just a shell of a human being. And I left breadcrumbs because I knew I couldn't get out of it. I left ways of people finding out just these horrible things that I were doing. And on August 9th, I was surrounded by people who I really considered to be part of my family. And they approached me and I was caught. They blatantly knew. They came out. They didn't know why. And in the moment, in that first moment, I lied like I could.
Let me stop you there. You got caught doing what?
I got caught taking money.
Got it.
I got caught, I got caught just doing everything that we do as compulsive gamblers.
I got you.
And I had a moment where in the moment I lied, but the next moment I told my truth, to what I could at that point, because I don't think I was, I was ready to admit the whole truth.
By the way, nobody ever does. It comes out in pieces. As much as we don't want it to, it comes out in pieces. That's actually a normal response. So don't think you're different in that regard. Very few gamblers, when they're caught or when they eventually have that moment where they've got to acknowledge that they've got a problem, very few to none come out and tell all of it at once. It's a very hard thing to do. And I'm not even talking about the stuff you forgot about.
Right.
Like, it's almost like you want to tip your toe in the water a little bit and make sure, you know, it's received well. You use the term suicidal thoughts, you know, dating back to when you were young. And I'm wondering, respectfully, did you ever attempt it?
Yeah, not to level three. I mean, I planned it. I've had pills in my hand. I've been on the path to get to the end where I was going to actually do it. I never luckily got to that step three.
I got you.
I did it in many different ways. But that day, the day I was caught, I was brought to my spouse, my husband, within a half an hour of being caught, and divulged more of my story to him. And in that moment, the betrayal, the hurt, the pain, the anger in his eyes, I thought I lost him, and I was ready to take my own life in that moment. And I would have, if he wasn't the man he was and the person he is, and brought me to the hospital. And, you know, there's such a lack of support when it comes to this disease and this addiction that even the doctor, heard my story, turned to me and said, you know what, you only have gambling problems, so why don't you go sleep it off and call Canadian Mental Health in the morning.
Wow. Unbelievable. Wow.
Sleep it off.
So you have this moment where you're caught, you know, and you've been stealing money or taking money that's not yours, and there's obviously going to be some legal, I imagine, repercussions to that. When you look your husband in the eye and you finally say, obviously I've got a problem, Did he ever say to you, I always knew it, there was something I noticed, I just didn't know how to ask you about it?
He always knew that there was something going on internally with me, for sure. He knew through my depression, my actions, that there was something wrong. But anytime we approached it as a couple, it was, again, very easy to find an excuse.
Sure.
The storytelling that you get very good at within this addiction, because we don't have something tangible to hold, becomes kind of our substance that we use. Those lies, it becomes that substance that we can use. It's just we can always make a path that is in our favor as opposed to our loved ones.
So a couple of questions on that, because we try to end the interviews, you know, on a positive note. Before I get to that, do you miss gambling at all?
Absolutely not.
You don't?
No. Gambling, you know, early in my recovery, I used to say gambling took everything from me, but I gave everything to gambling. I know that now. So my recovery is based on me taking my life back, me taking everything, every effort, every ounce of my emotion that I put into this addiction and turning it into a positive.
And how is life now? I'm sure your marriage isn't 100% great yet, but how are you now? How's your relationship now? And how are you feeling right now?
I kind of moved forward and definitely put 2 feet in and just go. So I am using my recovery and doing the work to show my loved ones, to show my support system that I can change and that I have changed. Part of my recovery as well is really not necessarily understanding why I gambled, but understanding anyone who's been in my position or continues to be in my position, because in reality, I see this as an epidemic. I see the correlation between gaming and gambling. I see the accessibility. I see the government greed in it. And it's hard when you try and reach out and try and find these resources that not only help yourself, but help others. But I have been driven by this as part of my recovery, obviously, is also working on myself. You know, I've been diagnosed with the whole shebang, with bipolar 1, with PTSD, with anxiety and compulsive gambling. So I've really latched on and tried to become part of this community of recovery. I speak to the Responsible Gaming Commission in Canada. I try and have meaningful conversations as to how I can make a difference, whether it is with a non-for-profit, with our local schools, with Canadian Mental Health as an opportunity to speak to people who may not have gone as far as I did, but have definitely the ability to do so. So I will no longer live my life in silence. And it's very hard for many of us to live loudly in recovery, but that's my path. It's part of my evolution. And you know, recovery is not a linear path. It's different for everyone.
Sure.
So if I can make a difference and I can sleep with the enemy in some retrospect, but also use them as a tool to make sure that this stigma and shame is pushed aside so people have a better understanding of this disease and this addiction. Like, that's my purpose now.
Well, look, the most powerful thing, and I can speak to myself in this journey of recovery, is shedding the shame. And once you shed it, you can own it and you can talk about it. Maybe not proudly, but you can talk about it without worry about how someone's going to react to it. So keep doing what you're doing, because more people like us need to share our stories so that we get rid of the stigma associated with it. And I'll end it by asking you one question. How is life for you today?
It is a complete 180. My life has meaningful connections. My life has purpose. I've built my self-confidence up. I have a better understanding, and I'm working towards a better version of myself. You know, I say I have buried those versions of myself that I was 124 days ago and further into my past, but I keep them very close to me because I need to know that I have the ability to become that person. I need to understand that me as a person did horrible things and have the ability to do that. And the only way I'm going to move forward is to keep that close to me so I can go visit my former self and realize that I don't want to be that person. I'm confident. I'm authentic. I am a person who has been present and has leadership roles in our support systems, even though they are lacking. And I really found purpose and just happiness, and so very important. And I thank you both for having kind of a platform. So as we have these conversations, and as we continue to have them, the people behind us may feel the strength to follow in our footsteps in a good way, as opposed to following the footsteps of the awfulness that is gambling.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and you know, more power to you. I know you still got some, you know, tough stuff you're dealing with. And you'll get through it, you know, with the same veracity you're attacking your recovery. Wish you the best luck with that. And thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Megan.
All right, take care.
Have a good day.
More Hello, My Name is Craig right after this.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
All right, welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Only a couple minutes left, Dan. Just your thoughts on what Megan had to say. There's a lot there to unpack, but your overall thoughts on it.
Yeah, you know, she's got a long road ahead of her. You know, I remember being in those footsteps. Don't want anything to do with gambling again. You know, taking accountability and starting to forgive yourself, but also keeping it close, because I never wanted to forget what put me in the position that I was in. You know, but as the time goes on, and we hope that Megan continues to work on that, she'll be able to forgive herself more and realize how she can help. She's found her purpose. I think she said the word purpose.
Seems like it, yeah.
Which is important. Yeah, but we've both been there. And so we know we're walking where she's walked. So
and look, the first 4 months are much harder than the next 4 months.
Yep.
Right? In recovery.
Yep.
Because you spend all this, you have to remember, gambling addicts spend an inordinate amount of their time, day after day after day, on gambling.
Yep.
And I'm not talking about just the time you're sitting at the table gambling or watching a ball game you have money on. I'm talking about the hours before that, the hours after that, the planning, the worry, the conniving,
yep,
the lies, that it's a major life change to go from that to not gambling at all.
100%. I mean, you've always said it well. The preoccupation, the amount of mental space that a person gets back in recovery is phenomenal, but then they have to do something with it. And that's the danger part. You have all this space, all this time. What am I going to do? It's easy to either substitute addiction. I'll start drinking, drugging, doing scratch-off lottery tickets. But trying to do and be productive is important.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.